It's a new day on ESPN Radio with new voices that have big things to say. Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin.
That's how you build a winning culture.
The Dan Le Batard Show with Stu Gatz.
You are like the Einstein of life.
Reading.
How ridiculously good was that?
The Max Kellerman Show.
Why not get out in front of it?
And Janaean Golick Jr.
I knew we were destined for greatness.
All day, every day.
Big names, new voices.
It is time to go to work.
Real talk. Weekdays on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and smart speakers everywhere.
We are having fun over there, and I will mention my podcast is available right now wherever you get your podcasts. I'm interested. This week, my guest is Ahmad Rashad, and you have to hear the story that he tells at the very end of the podcast about Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan. It'll bring a tear to your eye. You can check it out anywhere you get your podcasts. Meanwhile, with all the fun that we're having in here on Culture Wednesday today, Dan Orlovsky has responded on Twitter, and he tweets, "Say bra at Dominique, mayonnaise, Ryan Clark, my bad, man, my bad. I get the Drumline reference, great cinematic film, but you lost me on the Soulja Boy stuff, LOL, at Get Up." So that's Orlovsky responding, perhaps no surprise.
I wish.
What do you guys think?
I wish. So first of all, the Soulja Boy reference is from The Breakfast Club. I'm sure, just Google it, you'll find it. It's not that hard. Second of all, I wish the world could see this text message, group text
this
between
text
me and
message.
RC right now. Me and RC trying to convince Dan Orlovsky to use seasoning is the most outrageous thing ever. I told that man to put some seasoning on his food, and he said, "No, man."
No, he doesn't put seasoning on his food?
No parts of that.
He said, "No, man."
He said, "I want no parts."
I want no parts. I'm Amazoning him all types of salts right now.
Yep. Salts, peppers, I need it all. Paprika, I need everything.
And by the way, I should mention, look who is back for the first time.
Culture Wednesday.
From across the hall, John Williams is back in our studio. We're doing something we call the crossover here. We sent Graziano over there with Zubin and Keyshawn. I got J. Will over here, KJZ. They do their show from next door. We are live from the Seaport District at Pier 17, brought to you by Chase. And let's get right to it. We're getting up this hour with the NBA's new 1-2 punch. Are they about to do it to LA again? J. Will has got you covered right off the top. Then, the D in Big D stands for developing situation. And one big reason to believe the Cowboys are about to take a giant step forward. You will hear it. Plus, which of these unbeatens absolutely will not make the playoffs? You'll make the call. As we get this hour rolling, you're watching Get Up on ESPN. And here we go. Game of the night. Jay Williams, Lakers and LeBron. Up 2-0 on the Nuggets. Jamal Murray and company. Nuggets leading by 18. And here he comes with a full head of steam, giving the Nuggets a 20-point lead.
Yeah, fourth quarter, this is when Jamal Murray really took over, made two incredible shots down the stretch, two huge threes, plays a lot like Gilbert Arenas did back in the day.
Absolutely. This is because the Lakers had mounted this crazy comeback. Early in the fourth quarter, they go on a 21-6 run. You see the ball moving, there's AD.
And you often wonder, where was the sense of urgency for the Lakers the entire game? You wish they would have played with it.
And that Kendrick Perkins was on this morning saying exactly that. There's playoff Rondo with a steal. There's LeBron. He had 30 plus 11 assists plus 10 rebounds. But here comes the moment. Okay, here's LeBron on Nikola Jokic. So he takes it in. It's a three-point game. But now to the point you were making. Jamal Murray, when his team's season was on the line, came up huge.
Look how shifty that shot is, Greeny. It's tough. That's a little step back over Alex Caruso. And then the next three-point shot literally touches the ceiling of the bubble.
29 feet, and that one, as you see, is the crazy arc. He had 28, plus 12 assists, plus 8 boards. Nuggets get a win they desperately need, 114-106. Coach, let's talk.
I had no doubt, Sam, that we were going to show up tonight. And the reason I didn't have any doubt is because we won 6 straight elimination games. You know, everybody always has us packing our bags and leaving, but we're not ready to go. For some reason, we love this bubble. I can't explain that, but this team loves the bubble.
So earlier this morning, and you just touched on it briefly there during the highlight, Kendrick Perkins got mad. He said the Lakers didn't come out with a sense of urgency in that first half to put the Nuggets away. What did you see there?
Well, Jokic was the opener. He set the tone offensively. Jamal Murray was the closer. But the second unit is who won this game for the Denver Nuggets. They actually pushed to a 10-point lead, and that starts with Jeremy Grant, career-high 26 points that last night. He also guarded LeBron James, guarded Anthony Davis. And I will say this, Monte Morris knocked down shots. You also have Michael Porter Jr. that played well. But this is where analytics, you have to throw them out the window, Greeny. LeBron James had a triple-double last night, but it seemed like his impact on the game was just, AD kind of got started, but he also floated around the perimeter. They shot a lot of jump shots. They cannot settle for outside jumpers. One of the things that makes this team so good is when they dominate their paint, and that doesn't come from shooting 23% from the three-point line.
Look, the reality of it is, Anthony Davis knocks down a long contested three at the end of game two.
Which he shouldn't have gotten, by the way.
And if that doesn't go down, is my point, the Nuggets are up 2-1. So who's in control of this series right now?
Well, the Lakers still are. I still am not worried about the Lakers. I won't be worried about the Lakers unless they're down 3-2. Even if it's 2-2, you still have ultimate confidence in LeBron James and his team's defensive ability to clamp down on Jamal Murray and Jokic when it comes down to stressful and meaningful moments.
Well, they're going to try and clamp down on them, but Mike Malone was saying last night, we have two superstars. Everyone knows the Lakers have two superstars, LeBron and AD. He's saying in Jokic and Murray, we have two superstars. Is that true?
It's 1,000% facts. And when I look at JaVale McGee got punished by Jokic last night in the first quarter. Dwight Howard came in, tried to be aggressive, gritty, play mental Jedi mind tricks, still didn't work for Jokic. And when you involve them in ball screens at the open court in the top of the key, that is a problem. You cannot guard it. If you help from the weak side, Murray hits you with the skip pass to a Jeremy Grant three. Jamal Murray can literally play off the screen. It's like Gilbert Arenas. I don't know if people remember Agent Zero, but he was so dynamic with the ball that Jamal Murray is the 2020 version of that.
So let's look at it this way for a moment here. The Nuggets are about as resilient as a team can possibly be. They're down 3-1 to the Jazz, they come back and win. They're down 3-1 to the Lakers, to the Clippers, they come back and win. They get a dagger thrown at them in game two with that shot by Anthony Davis, they come back and win. What makes you so confident that this time is different and the Lakers still manage to hold them off?
Just because championship pedigree at the end of the day, and you often wonder with the Denver Nuggets, when will lack of experience factor in? Maybe it won't factor in. Maybe if you're the Denver Nuggets, you're sitting there saying, hey, if Mason Plumlee doesn't try to switch off a random screen by thin air in game two, you force AD to take a contested three. Maybe he misses that. You win that game. The Denver Nuggets should believe that they should be up 2-1 right now, because if they actually stay disciplined in their one defensive scheme and got an offensive rebound, that's what the score would say. And to be honest, with the way this team plays, them believing is just enough for them to stay in the fight.
KJZ, again, they do their show right across the hall. You hear them coast to coast every morning on ESPN Radio. It is so good to see you back here, my man. We'll do it again soon. The great Jay Williams with me here talking basketball. Jalen will be with us in about a half hour. Meanwhile, back to the football, and let's talk about them Cowboys. They overcame a 20-point deficit to beat the Falcons on Sunday behind four touchdowns from Dak Prescott. On his weekly radio call, Jerry Jones addressed the state of his 1-1 team.
Got a lot of work. We're not taking a football team into Seattle that's really hitting on all cylinders at all. We've got a lot of work to do. You saw it defensively. We've got some serious work to do. We've got alignments to work on. We've got basic defensive technique to work on. We're still working through the kinds of things you might be working through midway through training camp. Now, other teams are too. And so but we've got a lot to work on, but that's the good news.
Okay, so there's Jerry Jones, who, again, is the owner of the football team, talking about defensive alignment and technique. It just doesn't happen anywhere else, right? There is no other NFL team in which the owner – you don't hear Arthur Blank after that game coming out there and talking about what they got wrong on the onside kick that wound up costing the Falcons a team. It's just Jerry, and he's just one of a kind.
Jerry's – the only reason why Jerry is not the head coach of that team is because he don't have enough time. Like, Jerry wants to be in the nitty-gritty details of talking to D linemen about their hand placement and all that ridiculous stuff. But, yeah, I'm not shocked by him saying it, but it's still funny.
That said, let's move to what he's actually talking about. RC, that's a team that is one crazy comeback away from being 0-2 and staring at a very tough game against Seattle this weekend. How do you assess the state of the Dallas Cowboys right now, 2 weeks into the season? Ryan.
You look at this team. This team is undisciplined. This team almost looks unprepared, and they're lucky. And that's what they are. You go back to the first game. You go for it on 4th-and-3 when you have an opportunity to tie the game up. That's on Mike McCarthy. When you look at some of the issues you have early on in the game with four turnovers, that's also on Mike McCarthy and not teaching or talking ball security. Now look at this defense. This defense, you come in and you bring in Mike Nolan. Mike Nolan is supposed to change what they are, who they are, but they haven't been great this season at all. You knew that there were going to be some new guys on the back end. You add to that linebacker issues with injuries and also up front, not getting the type of pressure you would want on a quarterback from a guy like DeMarcus Lawrence, who you made one of the highest paid players on your team. And so Jerry's just stating the obvious. He's stating the obvious that this team has a lot of work to do. But I don't know if some of that work, especially defensively, can be fixed by practice or can be fixed by reps. Some of it is just not having the people or not having the talent perform in some positions like you needed to.
Desmond, Dak Prescott has become one of those players that it feels like every game is a referendum on his entire career. So that was one of the best games he's ever played the other night. Threw for 450 yards, all those touchdowns, and a crazy comeback win. What do you think that night meant for Dak Prescott?
That night was huge for Dak Prescott. I mean, from a confidence standpoint alone, just imagine what that did, not only for him, but for his teammates and for people in that organization that might have been doubters about his ability to bring this team back from behind. Don't forget, guys, in 2019, the Cowboys, they were 0-9 in potential game-tying or go-ahead drives late in games against teams that are playoff-caliber teams. So when you can start off the season with a drive like that, a game like that, it does a tremendous amount for the team's confidence. And then guys in the front office who are looking at this quarterback say, I know he wants a big, big payday. He's playing under a franchise tag, but we don't believe him. Now they may start to become believers in Dak Prescott and what he can do as a quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys and as a leader of that organization. So I thought it was big from a confidence standpoint.
Well, one person who has always believed in Dak, certainly on this show, is Neek. And last week, and Dominique, I quoted you many times here and on my radio show talking about how you believe they need to call plays more aggressively, to call an offensive game as though they have a superstar quarterback. And the circumstances, because they fell so far behind on Sunday, sort of forced them to do that. Do you think they may have found something there? Do you think that's the offensive formula for Dallas going forward?
I hope so. I mean, I think they are a balanced team talent-wise on the offensive side of the ball. So I'm not saying completely abandon Zeke. But when you're going to throw the ball, trust him. He's going to turn it over sometimes, but he's going to make more plays than he's going to miss. And I think when you have a defense that you really can't trust necessarily, you need to go ahead and lean on that offense and not get far behind and take those chances. And if you're going to go for it on fourth down, go for it on fourth down with Dak Prescott. He has proven that he's a guy that you can rely on. So hand him the ball, be aggressive, let him take shots down the field, get the ball to CeeDee Lamb, because he, I think, might grow into be the most special player on that offense in the coming years.
Quickly, RC, is that the formula? What we saw from that offense in the second half, is that the way the Dallas Cowboys are going to win this season?
It doesn't matter what formula you have against the Atlanta Falcons, you're going to score points. But they were forced into that, and it worked. They were able to hit big plays, and Dak Prescott looked every bit of the franchise quarterback. Here is what I'll say. Even with that, Ezekiel Elliott still had 28 touches against the Atlanta Falcons. And so we did see the big plays, but there was still balance with this team and Kellen Moore's play calling, the offensive coordinator. And so if that's what they're going to do, if they're going to lead with Zeke and allow Dak Prescott to use these great wide receivers down the field, that's something I'm all for. I'm not with just abandoning the run and saying, let's go warm moon, run and shoot with the Houston Oilers. But if they can maintain some balance and allow Dak Prescott to use the play action pass to his for his success, I think that's a formula that could win for the Dallas Cowboys, because with this defense, they're going to need to score points. And we saw them score a ton of them against the Atlanta Falcons.
Absolutely. And you see the matchup this weekend at Seattle. That's one of those late afternoon games. That should be one of the really interesting games, not just of this weekend, but of the season. Let me take a quick break here. We'll come back with more. Chicago Bulls fans still dreaming about Jordan and the team's last dance. Has Chicago now made a move to find someone who might lead them back to glory? We'll get into that in a few minutes, and then we will separate the pretenders from the contenders and tell you who really is the best team in the NFC. All that and more. We thank you for getting up with us on ESPN.
I don't know the question you're trying to ask.
Be better tomorrow.
I'm not answering that. That's a clown question, bro.
Next.
Mike, why are you in such a bad mood?
What do you care?
What else do you want to know?
Next question.
Your next question.
Next question.
Amazing team.
Next question.
I'm not going to answer any questions from you.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
It is time for Answer the Question, where I will pose a series of hard-hitting, provocative questions, and Dominique Foxworth, whether he wants to or not, has to answer them. We start in Philadelphia. Neek, will Carson Wentz start all 16 games for the Eagles this year?
I'd say no. He's missed plenty of games in two of his four seasons, and I think it's a good chance, considering the injuries they had to their offensive line, that he could get injured again this year. And they've already started to find ways to work Jalen Hurts into the offense, get him on the field, and get him comfortable. I doubt that they're going to move on from Carson Wentz because of his poor play so far, but I do think there's a good chance. Look at that. There's a good chance that if that keeps happening, that they might have to turn to Jalen Hurts and see what he can do with this offense to keep Carson Wentz from getting hurt any further than he already is exposing himself.
Well, let me slightly amend the question. If he's healthy, does he start all 16 games?
Yeah, I think he has to. Like, you've paid him this money. You need to find out what you have in him, which I think they already know. At his best, he can be one of the best in the league. He hasn't been that so far this year, but it's going to take a lot more than just one bad season for them to move on from a guy that they've committed to financially. I think they're going to stick with Carson Wentz no matter how bad it gets, and I don't suspect that it's going to get that much worse than it's got now. He has to get better because he's a really talented player.
Okay, next up, because you're talking about Jalen Hurts there, that's a rookie quarterback. There are a few of them out there. The next question is this. Which rookie quarterback will be the first to win a game as a starter this year?
I think it's going to be Herbert. I know that I would say that Burrow is better, but we saw Herbert has a lot of talent around him, and he seemed like he was comfortable in that moment. And I know much is being made of how he was kind of thrust in there only minutes before the game started. He found out he was going to be starting, but that might be an advantage for a young guy like that. And I think he has some confidence, some talent on that team. It's a different situation than with Joe Burrow, who I think will be the next guy to get a win. He has a team that is not quite as talented as that Chargers team is. So though we all know that wins are not a quarterback stat, so he has the best team, and that's a real bad decision right there. You don't want to be running into linebackers. I don't care who gets up hurt. You're not going to do that very often.
All right, one more question for you here. Let's talk about the NFC. Who is the best team in the NFC right now? Neat.
I think it's the Rams. Their resume so far, I think, is the most impressive. I'm not sure that I would pick them to go to the Super Bowl, but we can only go based on what we've seen so far. And they've gotten some really impressive wins. They've played well, and they seem like they've rekindled that offensive magic that they had a few years ago. Jared Goff is playing really well. And, man, that defense has two players on it that can make an entire defense. And Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey, you can build the whole defense around either one of those guys, and they have two of them. So this team is special, and I think right now, based on what we've seen so far, they've had the most impressive start in the NFC to me.
All right, they play Buffalo this week. It's Answer the Question with Dominique. Neek, let me pause you there for a moment because I am getting breaking news into our newsroom here in my ear as we speak, and I am extremely sorry to be the one to tell you that we have very sad news from the world of sports. And again, this is just developing as we speak, that the legendary Gale Sayers has died. Gale Sayers, who was one of the greatest running backs of all time and a Chicago Bears legend, has died, I'm told, at the age of 77. What I'm about to tell you, I will do off the top of my head. Again, this was not something that had been expected to my knowledge. We don't have almost anything prepared for you, but I did work and cover sports in Chicago for 11 years. Gale Sayers was a local icon and is considered by anyone old enough to have seen him play to have been one of the greatest running backs of all time. He played, if I'm not mistaken, 7 years for the Bears in total, but really only played five because he played at a time when a knee injury essentially ended your career, and that's what happened. But during that period of time that Gale Sayers was healthy, people, again, who are old enough to have seen it, will tell you he was as good a running back as there ever lived, and he is, in fact, a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, despite having played for as short a period of time as he did. I can tell you also, he was part of what is considered maybe the greatest draft of all time. In 1965, the Chicago Bears drafted Gale Sayers and Dick Butkus in the same season, and that is the stuff of legend in Chicago, though those teams never really went on to win almost anything during his tenure. And then finally, I would mention, of course, from a pop culture standpoint, his life was to some degree immortalized because of the relationship he had with another Bears player named Brian Piccolo, who died very young at the age of cancer, very young of cancer. And those two were very close friends. And the film Brian's Song is based on that relationship between those two men. And that is, candidly, it's a movie that makes you cry every single time you see it. So Gale Sayers has died at the age of 77. Again, a Hall of Famer and one of the great players ever. We're just getting this information as we speak. I will pass along any more as we get it. I don't know anything about the circumstances of his death. Who do I have ready to comment here? I have RC, Neek, and Desmond. Ryan, I'll start with you. Again, we are just getting this news as we speak, so I'm just asking for your first reaction. A legend in Gale Sayers, dead at the age of 77.
You know, you keep speaking about people who were old enough to see him play, and my father was, and it was my father's favorite running back. And Brian's Song was a movie that my dad got me to watch on VHS, and he was played by Billy Dee Williams, and I just remember, you know, watching that movie and seeing that relationships and seeing the old black and white film. He was kind of the first Christian McCaffrey. He was the first Alvin Kamara. He was a guy that returned kicks and did other things, and so he was an amazing part of our history of this league, an amazing part of our history as black men and as black players, and so it's truly a sad day, but a day that we get an opportunity to remember a legend and speak about a man who was one of the greatest running backs to play this game, even if it was only for a very short time, and give him his just due, give him his flowers, give him his shine. And I know there are many people in his family that will miss him, but for me, a guy whose father, you know, idolized Gale Sayers, it really hits home. And, you know, so prayers to his family, prayers to his loved ones and all those fans in Chicago who grew up or who knew about how much Gale Sayers meant to that organization.
Mine too. I could tell you that, Ryan. At any time in my entire career that I've talked about great running backs, my father would call me and he would say, if you leave Gale Sayers out of the conversation, then you don't know what you're talking about. People old enough to have seen him still marvel at how skilled he was. Desmond, again, your reaction this morning to the sad news, Gale Sayers dead at the age of 77.
Yeah, Green, just really shook to the core to hear that, because he, you know, he represented so much, not only as a player, but as a person. I remember growing up in Cleveland. Back then, I grew up in the era where we watched guys like Tony Dorsett and Walter Payton. But I remember my uncle telling me one time, he said, I know you like Walter Payton's sweetness, but check out this guy, Gale Sayers. Do your homework on Gale Sayers. And then just finding out the type of player he was, the type of person he was, like you and RC just alluded to, the Brian Song, such a strong movie, the relationship he had with his teammate, and then watching him on the field and just how graceful he was. But then also after he retired and meeting him, he had such pride, such dignity, carried himself with such poise. He was just a man to look up to. So very just shaken to hear that we lost a giant in Gale Sayers today.
I've just been handed some notes. He was born in May of 1943 in Wichita, Kansas. He was known as the Kansas Comet. He played his collegiate ball at the University of Kansas. Neek, I just have a quick second for you here, a quick reaction, and obviously we'll have much more coverage as our show continues.
Yeah, grace is the word that that Desmond just said that comes to mind. I remember I wasn't growing up watching him play live games, but every Saturday morning before my own little Pop Warner games, I'd get up and watch ESPN where they'd have those NFL films things on every single morning. And I remember being mesmerized by how great Gale Sayers was in those videos. And I remember thinking that he was a special, special player. And to hear about the grace that he had off the field also is so impressive. And if you haven't watched him play, the fact that he's a Hall of Famer on what essentially, as you mentioned, Greeny, was like a 5-year career with a knee injury that was actually 7 years, like, is a testament to how great a player he actually was.
He formed the Gale Sayers Foundation in 2007 with the aim of providing educational opportunities for underprivileged students. Again, the news this morning, the great Gale Sayers has died at the age of 77. We will have more coverage of that as we continue. Let me take a short break here. We'll come back with much more. You're watching Get Up on ESPN. We'll be back in just a moment.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Dell Tech Fest starts now. To thank you for 40 unforgettable years, Dell Technologies is celebrating with anniversary savings on their most popular tech. For a limited time only, save on select next-gen PCs like the XPS 13 Plus, where you can make the everyday easier with Windows 11. Unleash more possibilities with cutting-edge systems, their most advanced features, and great prices. Plus, curate your dream setup with deals on select monitors, mice, and more must-have electronics and accessories. When you shop online at Dell.com/deals, you'll have access to state-of-the-art technology to match your forward-thinking spirit and free shipping on everything. Anniversary savings await you for a limited time only at Dell.com/deals. That's Dell.com/deals. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We are back on Get Up with this breaking news. Again, just into our newsroom in the last few minutes, the legendary Gale Sayers has died at the age of 77, a Pro Football Hall of Famer and one of the greatest running backs ever to play in the National Football League, whose career was cut short by knee injuries, but nevertheless, despite really only playing five full healthy seasons, went into the Hall of Fame as the youngest ever to go in at the age of 34. I'm getting more information here. That's a statement that was released by the Pro Football Hall of Fame that says that he had been battling dementia. The statement is from the president of the Hall of Fame, David Baker, who says, "All those who love the game of football mourn the loss of one of the greatest to ever play the game with the passing of Chicago Bears legend Gale Sayers." Dan Graziano, my insider, is in studio here. Again, obviously, very sad news. And a player, I was just talking with Ryan Clark a moment ago, none of us old enough to have watched him play in his prime, but I cannot begin to tell you how many times my father would say to me, "Michael, if you don't include Gale Sayers when you talk about the best running backs of all time, then you just don't know what you're talking about."
Right, because you had to be an NFL fan at a very specific period of time. You're talking about a guy that really only played 5 years. He's not on any of the career leaderboards, right, because he didn't play long enough, rushing yards, rushing touchdowns. But he's one of those guys, if you saw him play, and there are people who didn't, they ignore him, and they say, well, because it wasn't long enough, and he's not on any of those lists or high enough on any of those lists. The people that saw him play will swear that this is as good as anyone's ever been at what he did for a brief period of time.
And he became an iconic figure again in pop culture because of the film Brian Song, which was based on a true story. Brian Piccolo was a Chicago Bears player who died of cancer very young, in his 20s, and he and Gale Sayers were very close friends. And that relationship and the way that Sayers supported Piccolo during his cancer battle, which is still celebrated by the Chicago Bears, have the Piccolo Foundation named in honor of Brian Piccolo to this day. That relationship was immortalized in the film Brian Song, in which Billy Dee Williams plays Gale Sayers. And it is a movie I've said many, I remember we used to do this on the radio on Mike and Mike. We would say, name a movie that makes you cry no matter how many times you see it. When you see Billy Dee Williams as Gale Sayers say, "I love Brian Piccolo," it's one of the most emotional moments, certainly in any sports movie, and maybe beyond that. So again, we are efforting further reaction to this today, but this news just coming across, Gale Sayers dead at the age of 77, and we will have more coverage of that as we continue. Meanwhile, we go back to the sports news of this day, and we begin with last night in the NBA's bubble, where the Lakers and the Nuggets were set to play game three of a series in which the Lakers had a 2-0 lead and were looking to essentially put it away. But the Nuggets had other ideas. They'd opened a lead of as many as 20 points. Now, LeBron James, with that drive in the fourth quarter, would bring it back to as close as three. But then Jamal Murray would say they would get no closer than that. Murray knocking down a three there. And then with under a minute to go and his team looking to put it away, look at the arc on this shot. Murray finishes with 28 points, 12 assists. LeBron had a 30-point triple-double, but it was a night that belonged to the Nuggets, and they are now within 2-1 in that series. And let's bring Jalen Rose in to talk about it. Good morning, Jalen, as always. And here's where I want to start with this game last night. The thought that keeps going through my mind is, you know, Anthony Davis knocks down a huge shot at the end of game two. If that bounces off the back of the rim, the Lakers are in a 2-1 hole right now. How do you see this series through three games?
No reason to panic if you're the Los Angeles Lakers, their fan base, LeBron James, or Anthony Davis. If they're healthy, they're going to win the championship this year. They have that pedigree led by LeBron James, who had a 30-point triple-double. But I agree with you, Greeny. This series and the Denver Nuggets are a lot better and closer than people actually imagine. And if Anthony Davis also misses that shot, Frank Vogel and LeBron James get criticized heavily the next day for running that play for their seven-footer, who's basically a 28% shooter in that situation. So Anthony Davis did bail them out in the previous game. However, his lack of aggression, wasn't on the boards, didn't really have a physical impact on the game is what helped cost the Los Angeles Lakers game three.
Yeah, Kendrick Perkins opened our show this morning, frankly, angry at the Lakers. He was aggravated at the lack of aggressiveness that they showed early in that game, AD and LeBron and everybody. Did you see it that way?
No, I want to give the Nuggets their credit, Greeny. They took the basketball game. You saw those hellacious shots that Jamal Murray was making late in the game? The rainbow three-point shot late? And how many times did you see the Joker jump off of a different foot to make a shot? That guy has so much skill, it's outstanding. Jeremy Grant and Morris combined for 40 big points. They needed each one of them. And beyond the score, Greeny, and I know the Lakers made a comeback late. They got a couple of steals, and the Nuggets got careless. This, in theory, was a blowout by the Denver Nuggets. I know the Lakers cut it to a one-possession game at some point late in the fourth. But the Nuggets were in control the entire time. They dominated the boards. Both teams shot over 50-plus percent. The Lakers only made 6 3-point shots. This was the Nuggets showing everybody that this can and should be a long series.
Well, let me give my buddy Rose Tradamus here a little bit of credit. April 2nd of 2018, we were sitting in this room the day we launched this show. And you were on the Nuggets bandwagon then. You were telling everybody, this is the team on the come. Whatever happens over the course of the rest of this week, are the Nuggets right now the team of the future in your mind in the NBA?
They're one of them, Greeny. It's hard to say in the era of dynamic duos. You're going to have so many, in particular in the West. We're going to get the Splash Brothers back. They're going to be back in contention. But I'll tell you what, as Jamal Murray has played in this bubble, they now have a legitimate dynamic duo. The Joker has been all NBA the last couple of seasons, and you could basically pencil him in for 25, 10, and 5 boards on a nightly basis. But when Jamal Murray plays like this in the playoffs, he had been doing it in the regular season. That's why they've been hovering amongst the top three teams in the Western Conference. But now that he has elevated, absolutely, the Denver Nuggets and that home court advantage. At some point, they're going to be playing in the Mile High. And you know they love to change ends of the floor. They build their team around that. And that home court advantage is something that's extremely distinct that's going to allow the Denver Nuggets to be one of the elite teams in the Western Conference for years to come.
Well, the West is going to be loaded. If you look at that duo you have there, you look at the two guys they have in Dallas, Golden State's going to get healthy. The Lakers aren't going away. The Clippers aren't going away. The West is going to be loaded. So the East is the place to go. So let me get you to the next topic here. Billy Donovan leaves the Oklahoma City Thunder. We wondered what stop he would make next. And yesterday, he chooses the Chicago Bulls, who have basically been a dormant franchise for the better part of a decade. What's your reaction to Billy D going to Chicago?
Donovan has been a terrific coach in college, winning 2 national championships. I think the job that he did in Oklahoma City is vastly underrated. I feel like I've been carrying the water for the job that he's done the last couple of seasons. I'm not going to say he's Pop or Eric Spoelstra, But I will say I saw him coach coach different teams in OKC, ones that was led by Russ. Then you bring in Paul George. Then you bring in Victor Oladipo. Then you bring in Chris Paul. Like, they continue to turn over that roster, and we can't acknowledge enough the fact that they outplayed expectations this year, got themselves into the playoffs, developed some young talent, got so many draft picks, he and Sam Presti, in return for the Paul George deal. The Oklahoma City Thunder are in a really good spot, and I want to give Billy Donovan a lot of credit for helping make that happen. He deserved another opportunity. It looks like it's going to happen in Chicago, and I wish him the best.
Can he make the Bulls a winner?
Well, they need players now. I'm a huge fan of Zach LaVine. He's a legitimate 20-point scorer, a terrific young athlete that has so much amazing potential. And Kobe White, we're going to talk so much about Zion, and rightfully so, and John Morant and all of these terrific young players. But the last, say, 10 or so games of the year, Kobe White was averaging over 25 points for the Chicago Bulls. I like marketing as a young talent. It's a Wendell Carter as well. So, again, you win in this league with elite-level players. And LaVine is an all-star-level player. Kobe White is an ascending player. But if you're going to take that leap, you need all NBA players, like the Nets are going to have when Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving comes back. But I think Billy Donovan is a really good hire, and I'm wishing him the best.
All right, and then finally, tonight you will be here in this studio for NBA Countdown in advance of Game 4 in the East. What do you expect to happen tonight? Celtics looking to even up that series. Miami looking to put a stranglehold.
I expect to get a fresh cut. I'm going to be suited and booted. I'm going to be ready to rock on NBA Countdown. I'm excited for tonight and getting back in the studio with my friends and my colleagues. Here's what I'm expecting. I'm expecting the Boston Celtics to duplicate what they did in the previous game. See, Gordon Hayward now solidifies their lineup. They're not the deepest team in the NBA, but they can put five guys out there that can dribble, pass, and shoot. They can switch defensively. Jaylen Brown was a bear defensively. He was just getting deflections, getting steals, getting runouts. He got some to Jason Tatum, and Marcus Smart always plays with that toughness and tenacity. And even Kemba, who had been struggling a little bit, then got over 20. So I anticipate a physical game since both teams haven't played in a few days. I love the Miami Heat and Jimmy Butler and Goran Dragic and Bam Adebayo and what they've done to get to this point. But I'm anticipating that the Boston Celtics are going to tie this series.
Should be a fascinating night. Again, that long layoff with all those teams in the bubble, it'll be interesting to see how it affects either or both of them. Jalen, you're the best. I'll see you tonight. Thank you, my man. That's Jalen Rose. Again, tonight, Game 4, NBA East Final. Celtics trying to even it up. Coverage will begin with Jalen and company. NBA Countdown, 7:30 Eastern. Then the Celtics and Heat follow live, 8:30 Eastern. You'll see it on ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and on the ESPN app. Coming up, these star quarterbacks all have their teams at 2-0 to start the year. But which one leads the best team in the sport right now? Ryan Clark counts down the top five next. We are back on Get Up, and if you were just joining us, breaking news into our newsroom this morning, and it is sad news. Gale Sayers has died at the age of 77, considered by anyone old enough to have seen him play in the 60s for the Chicago Bears. One of the greatest running backs of all time, he remains the youngest man ever inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame after a career that was shortened by a variety of knee injuries. He was inducted into the Hall of Fame at the age of 34 in 1977, dying today at the age of 77. That news coming from the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And you look at some of the accomplishments of his career, and there are so many and so noteworthy. He was, as you see, first team All-Pro in each of his first five seasons. And had it not been for injury, that streak would overwhelmingly likely have continued. Again, his life immortalized in so many people's mind by his relationship with Brian Piccolo, and which was the basis of the legendary film Brian's Song. So Gale Sayers is dead at the age of 77, and we are efforting any and all reaction that we can get. And as soon as we get in touch with any of the people who can share some of their recollections, we will certainly bring you to them. In the meantime, we continue with our show here, and we bring Ryan Clark back into the conversation. And RC, there's nothing we like better on this program than when you do your power rankings. So we figure we're 2 weeks into the season. Seems like a pretty good time to take stock of who are the five best teams in the NFL. Ryan, the floor is yours.
Listen, at number five, I'm going, here we go, Steelers. Here we go. I wish I had me a terrible towel. Listen, this team is stacked defensively. Even though we didn't see that from them week two, they were dominant week one against the New York Giants, and Big Ben Roethlisberger looks healthy. There was a play against the Denver Broncos. He rolls out the pocket through his right, to his right, throws the ball in the end zone to Deontay Johnson, and that's how I know Big Ben is back and ready to roll. James Conner got the ball rolling on the ground for them in their second game against Denver. I expect this team to be around late in the season. I just can't put them where Greeny wants to put them yet, but they're right behind two of those top teams. And listen, when we go from the Pittsburgh Steelers, we slide over number four, and that's going to be the Seattle Seahawks for me. They have a quarterback that is not just playing at an MVP level. He is the MVP. They've added Jamal Adams to the defensive side. And when you have a baller like that, that not only makes you change the way you play defense, but is used in a way you've never used a safety under Pete Carroll, you are doing things. Not Cam Chancellor, not Earl Thomas. So not only do they have an MVP on offense, but they possibly have the defensive player of the year in Jamal Adams. And he came from Greeny's Jets. So you know he's going to play better just like everybody else who leaves that team. The Seattle Seahawks are a team to watch, and they will be battling to win the NFC. And the team they'll probably be playing is the Green Bay Packers. Listen, for all the cheeseheads, for everybody who is like, we are not getting no love for Aaron, you have it now. Through the first 2 weeks, this offense has been amazing. Pass game, they didn't need to draft people. Valdez Scantling is balling. Lazar Allen is balling. And Devontae Adams is still Devontae Adams. And we saw that when he blessed rookie Jeffrey Okuda from the Detroit Lions by showing him that he is the Wisconsin release wizard. And Aaron Jones, think about what this man has to do. Catch the ball, run the ball, while still parenting and fathering 11 defensive player from the Detroit Lions. Do you know what it's like with that type of child support on your back? Aaron Jones is a monster. And at number two, this may be a surprise, but I'm going with the reigning champion Kansas City Chiefs. I know, RC, they just finished winning the championship. RC, they got Patrick Mahomes. They didn't even lose. How can you rank them second? Because they ain't first. That's why. And if you ain't first, you're last. Like they said on Talladega Nights. Listen, the Kansas City Chiefs are still a very good team. They still have the best player in football to me in Patrick Mahomes. This defense hasn't been as dominant as it was late in the season last year. And also, you've watched two teams with you watched the Los Angeles Chargers with their four rushers up front, two on the outside, Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa, get pressure on Patrick Mahomes. And that offense for three quarters was listless. It didn't look excited. So we will see what they look like when they play the number one team in the NFL this Monday night on ESPN, Lamar Jackson, the Baltimore Ravens. And listen, this team, they do it all. Defensively, you got two of the top corners in the league, and they make the best corner duo in Marlon Humphrey and Marcus Peters, both forced turnovers against the Houston Texans last week. Young linebacker Patrick Queen from LSU, already balling, 17 tackles, a sack on the season, a forced fumble. And when you talk about offense, they can run it, they can throw it, and it doesn't matter if it's play action. From the pocket, run game, it doesn't matter who takes the snap. J.K. Dobbins, Mark Ingram, Lamar Jackson, they are tough to stop. I am excited about this team. And I know you say, Ryan, we have seen this before. They were 14-2 last year. Kansas City beat them. Then Kansas City wins the championship. This year is going to be different. The Baltimore Ravens are the team to beat. They are number one. They will host playoff games. They will get a bye. And we can expect them to hoist the sticky Lombardi if things stay the same.
Outstanding. The top five from Ryan Clark. And I trust that voice that you do there is not your imitation of me, but it is other people who would be asking you questions about your opinions. I trust that's not the way you hear me when I talk to you. At least that's what I hope. Anyway, those are the five best. Now let's talk about maybe the other end of the spectrum a little bit. My poll question for today was, which of these four 2-0 teams do you believe will miss the playoffs? Now, usually we don't give away the answers this early, but over 25,000 votes have come in and 77% are not buying the Bears. So let me see if my panel agrees today. Dominique Foxworth, I will start with you. If you voted, actually, when you voted on my poll, because I know you voted on all my Twitter polls, which team did you vote for?
Yeah, I think the Bears are right. They got some narrow wins there, and I think the Mitch Trubisky hangover is still over all of us, even though he's played well late in some of these games. We still remember Mitch from last year where he was unable to connect with wide open receivers no matter how far out the pocket they got him or how easy those throws were. So he's had some great plays so far, but I think it's going to take a while for us to believe in him. But fortunately, doesn't look like very much in that division is all that good with the exception of the Green Bay Packers.
We'll see. So that's another vote for the Chicago Bears. How about you, Graziano? If you vote on my poll, who would you vote for?
Of the four choices you gave me, I would take the Bears. I think they've looked the shakiest of those four teams. But if you expand it to all the 2-0 teams, and this doesn't sound great after Monday night, I think I would take the Raiders. Yes, they looked fantastic against the Saints. Everything went right for them in that game. And maybe I'm wrong, but I just don't know where the pass rush is going to come from for this team in order to help them close out games at the end, and let's see it for a full year from Derek Carr before we really buy in. So that would be my 2-0 team most likely to miss.
Okay, I'll let you. I will give you special dispensation to go off the board for the poll today. Desmond Howard, how about you? 2-0 team that you think is likeliest to miss the playoffs?
I'm going to vote, and I'm going to vote the Arizona Cardinals. You know, I may surprise some people. I think it's easy to pick the Bears with Mitch Trubisky, but, you know, the Cardinals, I'm not sure about Cliff Kingsbury. Now, Dominique made a great point earlier. He said maybe he's a better NFL coach than college coach. I'm going back to the way he coached in college and what I saw then, so I'm really still surprised he has an NFL job, but he has my favorite receiver, DeAndre Hopkins, and obviously Kyler Murray playing at a high level. Not sure they can sustain that throughout the rest of the season. So I'm not quite sure I buy Cliff Kingsbury as the team, as the coach that can take this team to the playoff in his second year. So I'm going with the Cardinals.
That's an interesting perspective to take. A lot of people think that they're the surprise team, a team that was 1-15 2 years ago. Again, you can keep casting your vote. I'll keep it up through the radio show today at ESPN Greeny on Twitter. Meanwhile, as the morning continues here on ESPN, the Lakers lose by 8 last night, but it wasn't nearly as close as that. Did LeBron and company just have an off night, or were there more troubling signs? Stephen A. and Max talk about that and more. First Take is next on ESPN. Get Up is brought to you by Pizza Hut. Order today at pizzahut.com. Meanwhile, baseball coming your way. The Cardinals keep their postseason push going. It's tonight on ESPN2 as they wrap up the series with the Royals. Coverage 8 Eastern tonight on ESPN2 and on the ESPN app. Meanwhile, Game 2 between the Storm and the Lynx is tomorrow night on ESPN2. Part of our WNBA semifinals doubleheader. Starts 7:30 Eastern with league MVP Asia Wilson and the Aces taking on the Sun. That's followed by the Storm and the Lynx. It's on ESPN2 and on the ESPN app. Meanwhile, Ryan Fitzpatrick and Gardner Minshew getting set to face off on Thursday Night Football, which led to an epic debate over their facial hair.
I think the beard is a cooler look, and I think guys that grow mustaches a lot of times have patchy sides for their beards, so they just stick with the mustache. But my wife appreciates the mustache trimmed up a little bit more. But she does hate the beard, too. So I guess that's a lose-lose for me.
You know, I think I've shown I can grow a beard with no patchy sides. But, you know, I'm gonna have respect for my elders, you know, especially when they're much, much elder. Be respectful.
I'm not going to lie to you. Facial hair or otherwise, Dan Graziano, there's something about Gardner Minshew that's impossible not to like. And that response, that rejoinder, I think was a good example of it.
I don't think there are many people having more fun right now in the NFL than Gardner Minshew as being a starting quarterback. I got to go with the beard, though, over mustache. Not necessarily a Lord of the Rings beard like Ryan Fitzpatrick has grown, but I think that fuller look over just the mustache.
Ryan Fitzpatrick looks to me like his face was carved into a walnut.
Yeah,
that's the impression that it gives me. Anyway, that's all the time we have. I'll see you on radio noon Eastern. First Take starts now.